Well, welcome back, everyone, to the Life Rediscovered podcast, where we talk about life, faith, and everything in between. So happy to have you with me again, as always. I hope that
welcome
you
to the
are having
Life
a great
Rediscovered
week,
podcast,
and I hope that you've enjoyed
life,
the last couple of episodes of this podcast.
Host,
if you
Ryan
haven't
Healy,
left a review of this podcast, so really appreciate those. Any kind of reviews, any kind of feedback is super helpful because it helps me to learn how to be a better podcast host, and also gives me some insight of what you're looking for as far as topics and subjects that you would like me to talk about. So on today's podcast, I have another special guest, and this is somebody I met again online. And what's interesting about this guest, her name is Katrina Robertson. And what's interesting about this guest is that she lives in Arkansas. And so, and she went to Washita Baptist University, which I played against them. We were just talking about this, so I'm gonna have to tell the story now. So we played against them when I was a freshman in college. And while we were playing against them, we got into a bench clearing brawl with Washita Baptist University. So you definitely have to watch those Baptist schools because they like
Absolutely.
To pick fights. They like
Absolutely.
To pick fights.
And you said you were at Lyons. I'm trying to remember what denomination Lyons is kind of.
We are Presbyterian. We were Presbyterian based, but it's very loose Presbyterian
based. Yeah,
so.
I knew it was kind of loose, whatever it was that they. So
we were obviously heathens. We were heathens. That's what we were. So, Katrina, I just met her online, and she has such an interesting story, and it has interesting. She's written a book, and I'm going to let her tell about the book and kind of motivation behind that. But Katrina, welcome to the podcast, and thanks again for coming on. Really, really appreciate you being willing to come on the podcast and talk about, you know, who you are and what you do and all those kind of things. So I'm going to hand it over to you and just kind of let you take it and talk about yourself. Feel free to brag about yourself, plug yourself, do whatever you have to do. So that's what this is here for. So,
I appreciate it. The invite to be on here. I always enjoy meeting new people, telling my story. I love hearing other people's stories. I know I listen, I always make a point to listen to the podcasts of at least an episode or two of when I'm going to be a guest on, just to kind of get an idea for how they do things. And I remember in the one I listened to, you talked about how you always were curious about people's stories and like to hear their stories. And I'm the same way. I think our stories are important. And you mentioned I'd written a book. My book is kind of in a memoir style book. And it's one of my favorite genres to read just because I love people's stories. We can learn so much from them. And I think that if you think you have a story that nobody cares to hear, I guarantee you there are people that would care to hear it. And so yeah, anyway, I'm glad to be here. I'm kind of an open book. You can kind of ask me anything.
Okay, cool. So I'll ask you about your book. So the title, tell us the title of your book first.
Sure. Well, it's Juror Number 11. And then the subtitle is A Memoir of the Broken Justice System and Rising from the Trials of Life.
So what, kind of give us the kind of the background of the book. Like, why did you decide to write a book? Obviously, based on the title, Juror Number 11, you were a juror.
Correct.
Which, funny, ironically, this coming Tuesday, as of this recording, I have jury duty for the first time ever. So,
We would way extend our time limits if I got into the nitty gritty of that, but you might want to grab the book. It's a quick read and get some little tips on what to do and not to do.
Okay.
Should you get selected?
I can read fast.
Yeah. But so I'll back up just a little bit and give you a little bit more background information on me. Like you already mentioned, I'm from Arkansas, live in Hot Springs, Arkansas. My husband and I have been married 28 years. We have 5 children, 2 biological, 3 are adopted. 2 of those adopted children we adopted from the foster care system. One of them we actually adopted as an adult, and that's kind of a whole other story. And my husband has been in the ministry, served on churches for 20 plus years. Now he's a chaplain at our local hospital. I am an investment advisor, wealth management person, and have been at a local wealth management firm for going on 18 years now. So that's kind of me in a nutshell and who I am. But as I had mentioned, you know, adopting these children on my social media, I was always very vulnerable and open and honest about the very hard and difficult parts of adoption, specifically when you're bringing children into your home that have significant trauma backgrounds. And, you know, when you talk about adoption, it's obviously a very beautiful thing. And everybody likes those pretty rainbow and butterfly pictures and stories and miracles that are a result of the family formed through adoption and life restored, a child given a forever family. But the reality is there's often a whole lot more hurt and hard than there is those pretty pictures. And I was very open and honest throughout our journey. And because of that, I had so many people reach out to me, especially foster and adoptive moms over the years, saying, you need to write a book. You know, nobody shares this hard and you feel like you're alone and you need to write a book. Well, I had five, you know, at times seven children in my house. At one point I had five teenage boys and two teenage girls in my house, and I was doing enough just to keep food in the fridge. So writing the book was not on
No
the table.
kidding.
And it was also, I mean, I just being honest, it was a lot of heartbreak. And it's like, who wants to read my sob story?
Sure.
But so I was in the midst of some pretty heartbreaking and horrific situations with a couple of my children. And then my daughter, it was actually the day of her wedding when I was summoned to jury duty. Literally, you know,
Wow.
getting ready for the wedding and get the notification. I'm like, awesome. You know, I absolutely have time to add this to my plate right now. And how jury duty works is, you know, you just because like you said, you're supposed to go next week or whatever, doesn't mean you're actually get chosen to serve. They go through kind of a whole board hire process to try to choose the best. And I'd gotten to that place several times, but this particular case, I did actually get selected. And it was a murder trial. And, you know, I'll skip all the details of it. You'll just have to grab the book for that and leave you with the cliffhanger of I ended up being charged with contempt of court after the trial was over, faced the possibility of jail time, and a mistrial was granted. And that began this 5 month period just like, if you've ever felt like you've kind of been yanked up and put into the twilight zone, or maybe sucker punched by life, or the rug yanked up out from underneath you. So I got to the, you know, once all of that was kind of behind me and wrapped up to a degree, I was like, you know what? I'm gonna write that book. And so that's where the title of the book comes from, Juror Number 11. But I took the opportunity to kind of interweave in some of the simultaneous things that I was walking through with my kids at the same time, and then just a lot of other just crazy hard life stuff. And the reason I did it was kind of twofold. You know, one, I wanted an opportunity to tell my side of the story because I wasn't allowed to do that. I wanted people to, I attempted to put them in my shoes and walk my path and explain why I did and said the things I did, where I was at that moment. And two, like I said at the beginning, I think telling our stories is important. I think not only is it does it do we learn from telling our own stories and get healing and growth from telling our stories rather than just shoving it under a rug and forget about it, but other people learn and grow and heal. And then the other piece of it was, you know, so kind of the cornerstone of the whole story is my faith. And specifically, what faith looks like when you're in the even if part of faith, when you are, God, I trust that you are good. But this doesn't feel good. And I'm praying, but I don't feel that you are listening. I don't feel that you are there. And I don't know if you love me, God. And I was very vulnerable about that and walking through some really hard emotions. And I kind of, I end a lot of it's written in kind of a diary format. I end a lot of the daily, excerpts with, breathe. You know, in fact, it became such a theme to me. And I know your listeners can't see this, but it's, it's tattooed on my forearm
Oh,
of,
cool.
breathe. But then on the other side is, be still. And it's not the be still and know I'm God. It's Exodus 14:14 of the Lord your God will fight for you. You must only be still.
Sure. Good one.
And then, as Christians and the particular podcast of yours that I listened to, you guys kind of touched on this a little bit of how as Christians, we kind of, there's kind of this unspoken rule or understanding that if you're doing everything right and you've got good faith, strong faith, things are going to be easy. That God's going to answer your prayers and everything's going to work out. And that if you're not, well, you must be doing something wrong. And so we have this tendency to kind of always fake it, act like things are great. And I know that you asked that particular guest, why do you think that is? And, before I jump off into that tangent, I want to, not find myself doing all of the talking here. But that was also kind of another reason why I wrote it is because I really have a heart for encouraging other believers when they're in those periods of, just despair and desperation, and encouraging them that it's not because you lack faith, that doesn't have anything to do with it. We tend to focus on the miracle stories of faith, even in the word, Hebrews 11, one of my favorite passages. But we skip over the part right there in the middle where there's so many individuals, they don't even name them specifically by name like the others, but it says they did not receive the promises, that they were stoned to death and sawed in two and went about in sheepskins and goat cloth and destitute. And it says the world was not worthy of them. Their faith was just as strong, but they didn't receive what surely they were praying for. But so that's kind of it. So in writing it, even though my specific story is unique, I have yet to met somebody that served on a jury duty and nearly went to jail for it. I shouldn't have said nearly, because now I've already kind of disclosed I didn't actually go to jail. There was some other repercussions and discipline. But I do, of course, know other foster and adoptive moms that have been through some pretty tragic and hard things there. But like I said, at the end of the day, everybody, if you've been alive long enough, have had those moments in life where it just is not, you are doing what you know God has called you to do. You're being faithful. You're checking all the boxes off in your faith life and prayer life. And you're like, where is God in this? Whether it's a health crisis, a relationship crisis, a financial crisis, whatever. And so I really had a surprising reaction to the book when it came out of so many people saying, man, you really encourage and inspire me. Which made me feel good.
Well, yeah, I think we, I'll say this first and I want to hit on something you talked about earlier, but, I feel like we treat faith, as Christians, we treat faith as this like kind of a lot of times it's transactional thing. I get that term from a podcast I was listening to yesterday. And that's, the guest on there was used that kind of term. It's a trend. We treat it like a transaction.
Right. I do this so that God will do that.
Yes. Like God, I prayed, I read my Bible, I went to church, went to Bible study even. I volunteered at church. I gave money to somebody I didn't have to, or whatever it is. And then so God, now what are you gonna do for me? And I was on Sunday morning, this last Sunday as of this recording, I was talking to people, I was up front, doing the message, and I read from Psalm 42. And Psalm 42 is such a powerful psalm because it's honest and it's brutally honest. And
I think over half of the psalms are songs of despair and despair. God, why do you hate me?
Yes, because I was talking about being honest with God sometimes when you pray. And I said, when I say be honest with God, I'm saying sometimes we have to pray with gritted teeth where we're saying, I praise you, God, but man, I'm really frustrated, you know, and mm-hmm. you know, where I've done all these things, but you haven't shown up. And, you know, I think what you bring up with Hebrews 11, that's one of my favorite chapters because I love that part where it says, but, you know, a lot of these didn't see the promises fulfilled. And you even pointed out that the world was not even worthy of them, you know, because I'm thinking about Abraham, and Abraham had all these promises made to him, and he really only saw one promise fulfilled, and that was Isaac. And that was it. Right. You know, he never got into the promised land, never saw all his descendants. You know, there's nothing. He saw nothing. But when Jesus comes around and he's talking to some Jews who are saying, well, Abraham's our father. And he said, if Abraham was your father, then you'd believe like Abraham did. And he said, Abraham looked forward to my day and was glad. And it's like, that's powerful because, you know, Abraham didn't get to see any of these promises fulfilled except for Isaac. But he looked forward to the day when God would make all the nations, you know, blessed through him. And he knew he didn't know specifically how that was going to happen, but he trusted that God was going to do it.
Right. And so, I think that those that are able to, in fact, in Hebrews 11, you know, when it is talking about all those miracles that the individuals of faith did see, and it says because of their faith, there's the mention of, you know, the flames of fury were quenched, the quenching of the, you know, which we know is referring to Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who had been tossed into the fiery furnace and, you know, were, didn't even smell the smoke when they got out. But if you go back to Daniel, when that whole story is played out and King Nebuchadnezzar, you know, he's ticked off because they won't bow down to this idol. And he pulls them into his presence. And they're like, he says, you know, look, if you don't bow down to the idol, I'm putting you in the fiery furnace. And they said, you know, that's fine. You can do that. Our God is capable of saving us from the furnace. But then they say, but even if he does not, we are not going to bow down and worship the idol. And I think that that's key. And I think that they, and I'm kind of like, so what if God hadn't saved them? Well, then they would have been in that after verse 35 chunk, and they would have included burned to death as one of the ones. They would have been one of the ones that died in faith. But I believe that they were able to say that, but even if he does not, because they had a good grasp of what you were just referring to as far as these, you know, these present momentary trials and struggles are nothing compared to the greatness of what's coming. Mm-hmm. And understanding that the here and now is so insignificant when we talk about eternity and it all playing a part of everything eventually coming together, and just truly having faith in that. That's where the faith comes in. We can't see it.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I think that's, you know, when you're talking about, you know, stories and sharing our stories with each other. And I think we can learn so much from each other's experiences and about faith. Mm-hmm. And how, because you've gone through things that I haven't and vice versa. And if we share those stories, like, you know, and I've said this on the podcast several times, but, you know, I tell people all the time, like, look, if you're having a rough day, just say you're having a rough day, you know, just be honest.
Right.
I'm a firm believer in just being honest and just ripping the Band-Aid off sometimes. Cause in it, especially if it's a, you know, obviously every situation is different. You got to use some discernment there, but
sure.
If it's somebody that is close to you or you're close with, or you're, you know, it's a trusted person, if you're really having a rough day, you know, there's no reason to put, like you said earlier, put a smile on your face and act like everything's okay when everything is just really falling apart and your faith is really struggling. And
And not only that, to be honest and vulnerable, you know, in the right situations, of course, with people, but also with God, sometimes, you know, in the podcast of yours that I listened to, Job was also brought up and how, you know, Job, well, let me kind of, I'm kind of chasing rabbits a little bit. Let me say our pastor at our church is one of those kind of energizer bunnies that he has energy that I don't even know where it comes from. And he's kind of like always positive and always enthusiastic and always happy. And, you know, God's always going to do great things and just have faith and pray big, which is great. It's, I mean, there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. But when you are in seasons of just absolute despair, it can be like, maybe my faith just isn't strong enough because I'm not feeling or seeing, or there is no. And so, and there was one particular Sunday where that, where I was kind of in those depths of despair and the message was on being thankful and all that. And, you know, I kind of left just feeling like maybe something's wrong with me and my faith. And I got back home and the two characters that I really felt the Lord lead me to go through and read was Job and Naomi. And with Job, in fact, Job had even been mentioned in the sermon that morning. And I don't remember in what regard, because he is not a good example to turn to when you're talking about being thankful, because Job, if you read it, it's exhausting to read. It's like 30 chapters of him wailing and crying and saying, God, you know, blocks me. And I mean, even says that God's his enemy at one point. And his, and of course he does that. And then his friends, you know, after a certain point, I mean, they get tired of hearing it. They're like, you know, Job, maybe you're the problem here. And of course that fell apart and Job hated him for it. But I think that is one of the reasons why we sometimes don't want to be vulnerable with other people, because they're going to think, you know, well, I mean, all you got to do is X, Y, Z, you know, do this prayer checklist or read these passages or just have more faith and it's going to fix it, that I'm doing something wrong, basically. And, or then also we feel like if you're really, truly a strong person of faith, you're not going to talk to God like that. Why would you talk to God like that? Now, and even though God does chastise Job a little bit for his little tirade, he does restore him. So he was obviously completely okay and accepting with the fact that Job was going through it. And did not cut him off from being restored because he called, you know, he called God his enemy, but I don't think he ever lost his faith in God. He just was very honest that he did not understand why he was going through what he was going through. And then my other one, and I love the story of Naomi, and of course you've got to go to Ruth to get to Naomi, but just to kind of make it a little bit short, Naomi, you know, I mean, she also had, she'd been given more than she could handle. She'd lost her husband, her sons. Naomi, the name means gentle and pleasant. She goes back to her homeland. They greet her excitedly. You realize she's kind of become this cranky old woman. And she says, don't even call me that. Call me Mara, because the Lord sent me away full. I've come back empty and I'm bitter. You know, and so I'm kind of like, it's kind of like, oh, that negative honesty probably like shut all the other women up, and they probably ran off and gossiped about her. But if you read the very end of the book of Ruth, you know, they come and they set that grandson on her lap. And I think that that's when she kind of exhales and is able to say, you know, God is good. And he, even though she was very honest with her feelings towards God and her circumstances that he could have changed, he still, I mean, she's in the line of Christ.
It's awesome. And I think that's, you know, we're so afraid, and you hit on this, we're afraid to tell our story sometimes because, you know, we don't want to be judged because we live in a very, we live in a very, I don't know what the term for it is, but a quick judgment society where, and social media has created us to be that way, has kind of formed us to be that way. You know, and cause I remember like an example, there was this whole story that blew up on social media a few years back. This guy at a Chicago Cubs game caught a foul ball, and turned and gave it to his wife who was sitting next to him instead of giving it to the kid that was sitting behind him. And so the story just blew up and people are like comparing this guy to Hitler.
I think I remember it.
Yeah. I mean, people on social media were comparing this guy to Hitler. I'm like, really? Like Hitler killed 6 million people. Like that's, that's a little bit much.
A little harsh.
That's a little harsh. And so a writer for the Chicago Tribune decided to go after the real story. And he put it in the Chicago Tribune, wrote a whole article about this guy. Mm-hmm. And the real story is he actually turned to give it to the kid. Well, he already given him two. And the mom said, no, 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 you keep it. And that's when he turned and gave it to his wife. And so,
But
people see the one little video clip of the guy giving it to his wife instead of the kid, and they automatically judge, like, what a horrible, horrible person.
Yeah.
And so the journalist was
kind of that same thing with, I don't do sports at all. But the Super Bowl, and I guess there was this one snapshot of, I don't even know the individual's names, but one of the players looked like he was just right up in the face of the coach.
Oh,
and
Travis Kelce yelling at his coach.
And it was like, you know, how, anyway, disrespect or this and that. And then I saw an interview where the coach was like, no, man, it wasn't anything like that.
that's just who he is. Yeah, I mean, if you're, because like, if somebody heard, if somebody just heard like a little clip of this podcast and heard you, and the only clip they heard was, well, I was found in contempt of court. Then all these like judgments would come upon, like come in your head.
So
it's like,
funny.
Oh, they're a horrible person. They're this. Instead of actually, and I think it's important that you share your side of your story. Because
Well, in fact, you're so quick to judge. A story specifically about that. So, you know, the writing the book has kind of opened up. That's, you know, the opportunity to do the podcast, but then also some speaking engagements. And last month I was the keynote speaker at a women's conference, and I don't go into the whole court thing, but mention it. At the very beginning, it's just kind of an attention grabber is all it is.
Yeah.
And when I start my talk, and then at the lunchtime, I was selling books. My daughter was there with me, and she had gone to go get in line for food. And of course, they didn't realize she was my daughter. And my daughter comes back. She goes, I had to set some old women straight. They were gossiping about you and how you may not should be speaking at churches, because obviously you did something wrong. We were looking at jail time for contempt of court.
Wow.
And she said, I had to interrupt them and tell them I knew the whole story. And if they wanted to know it, they need to just go buy a book and read it.
Yeah. But it's true. That's what people do. Like, and Christians can be sometimes the worst about it and say like, oh, you shouldn't be speaking at a conference because you did this. And like, I could say like, well, I got fired from my first youth pastor job, you know, because, and people say, well, he must have done something, especially in our day and age. It could be like going down a really bad rabbit hole, and I could be compared to Hitler. Who knows? and you know, even the campus ministry job I had to leave that job because I was dating my wife, and they'd be like, well, that guy must have been like 50 years old dating like a 19-year-old or something like that. And no, I was 49 and she was 19. No, I'm just kidding. That's not true. but we make these judgments and say like, how are you, you know, and somebody could say, well, how could you be invited to speak at these women's conferences if you did this? Or how could you be a pastor of a church if you got fired from a youth pastor job and you were dating a student?
We obviously haven't read the biographies of a lot of these Bible characters in Hebrews chapter 11.
I know. And I did a whole Bible study on like the heroes of the faith. Right. And I put that heroes and quotation marks, because I'm like, look at these people, right? You know, you got Abraham. We mentioned Abraham earlier. Like, well, Abraham basically told his wife, hey, I need you to tell them you're my sister so they don't kill me. You know, putting his wife on the line.
Yeah. And then you can, you know, and you can put this on Sarah's shoulders if you want, but then there's the whole, you know, go sleep with somebody else to fulfill God's promise. you know, so, I mean, it was Sarah's idea, but Abraham went along with it.
Yeah. So. I don't really remember a part in the Bible where Abraham argued about that. He's like, you know,
he didn't say anything.
Okay. He's like, okay. I mean, you got like David who, you know, committed adultery and tried to hide it getting
a murderer,
Bathsheba's husband drunk, and then murdered him. You know, it's just crazy stuff. And these are the heroes of the faith. Even Samson's mentioned in there. Samson was like,
he was awful.
He was awful until the very end, but
yeah.
It's but we just we're so quick to judge even today, and we need to take a step back and reread, you know, Matthew 7, where Jesus says, "Do not judge, or you too will be judged." And he says, "You know, you're worried about the speck in your brother's eye when you have a log in your own. It's like, why don't you go deal with that first, and then you can deal with the speck in your brother's eye." Because, and I think when we come back, we deal with the log in our own eye. When we come back, we realize, wow, that really is a speck and it's not that big a deal, you know? Yeah. And that, I think that's the point Jesus is trying to make. It's like, stop judging, stop being so quick to judge.
Yeah. How the Lord, got me to, for the most part, quit judging is, you know, if I would be like, you know, I would never blah, 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 or that's never gonna with my husband or kid or whatever. Absolutely. I said, just a minute. That'll humble you real quick.
Yeah. Oh yeah, for sure. I would never do that. And then you do it.
Yeah.
And it's
yeah.
like, oh yeah, I totally did that.
Yeah.
So let me ask you this. Let me ask you this last question. You know, we've been talking about faith really this whole time, and kind of those moments where our faith is really challenged and it can be weak. How did you get through those times when you felt like because you're talking about the one time you were in church and you really just felt like your faith was weak. And I'm sure you've had those moments, you know, having your own kids and then bringing in adopted children. Cause we have friends who adopted 7 kids and they had 4 of their own. So it's like, you know, they have 11 kids total. I may have 12 now. So they've had all kinds of challenges with, you know, different contexts and things like that. So, how did you, you know, be able to, I know God gets us out of those things, but what did you learn, I guess, through those times where you felt like your faith was weak?
Well, I mean, like we already kind of talked about, was not being afraid of those emotions and those feelings. Like I would allow myself, I call it, to kind of sit in my ash pile. Sit in my ash pile. If I need to yell and scream at God and ask tough questions and say, I don't get this, it's not right, it's not fair, I don't see where you're in this, I don't see how you could be a loving father and allow this to happen. Like I allow myself to just ugly cry, like some of us women will say. But then the key is you can't stay there. You can't get stuck in that place. It's making the choice of saying, okay, this is how I feel right now. My circumstances all seem to point to my emotions are correct, but I'm going to step out of this ash pile and I'm going to stand on the truth despite what my circumstances and emotions are telling me. And that's when the faith comes in, is believing that to be the truth, even though emotions and circumstances do not declare that. So it's kind of placing that truth above emotions, but not totally discrediting your emotions, allowing yourself to feel them, sit in your ash pile, and then rise back up out of it. And sometimes it's a daily thing where, you know, you think you're doing pretty darn good, and you know, whatever, an email comes through, you get that phone call or something, and it's just, you know, how a day can totally derail.
For
and
sure.
you find yourself having to sit in that ash pile again, and then you dry your eyes and you stand back up.
Yeah. And you know, going back to Psalm 42 that I mentioned earlier, you know, a couple of times it's written by the sons of the Korah, and they mention in there, it says, "Why are you downcast, O my soul? Why are you so disturbed within me?" And it says, "Put your hope in God, my Savior and my God." And it's like they're giving themselves a pep talk, like, all right, why are you downcast? Let's look back and see what God has done. Let's put our hope in God, our Savior and our God, and we'll move forward. And so I think that's super helpful.
Well, and I kind of, you know, I mentioned I spoke it, and I'm trying to look up the verses right now. When I'd spoke at that women's conference, one of the things we talked about was these emotions and reconciling the feelings with facts. And I had, and my Bible app wants to give me an ad, but I talked about, you know, how those emotions are God-given and not bad. And you talk about Psalms and all the honest vulnerability in that, but then like the book of Lamentations, it
Oh,
literally
yeah.
lament means a strong, sorrowful, you know, despair. And so the entire book of Lamentations is basically lamenting, where I believe it's Jeremiah is believed to have written the book. But I said, you know, one of the verses we are all familiar with in Lamentations is in chapter 3 and verses, it's like 21, 23, 22, 23 in there. It says, therefore, I have hope. Because of the Lord's faithful love, we do not perish. His mercies never end. They are new every morning. Great is your faithfulness. That's a verse that most people, if they've been in church, they recognize. And I think we do a disservice that we just start at verse 20. This is in chapter 3. Because if you back up, he starts chapter 3 with, I am a man who has seen affliction. I'm under the rod of God's wrath. He says, God repeatedly turns his hand against me all day long. He has worn away my flesh and skin, shattered my bones, laid siege against me. Anyway, 20 verses of him talking about how God himself is the reason for his torment. And then he says, but God is faithful. And, you know, I think that if you just skip only to those verses 21, 23 about his mercies never end and how faithful he is, you may be kind of like, well, I sure don't feel that or see that. Well, Jeremiah didn't either. Jeremiah chose to believe it, even though he didn't see it or feel it. And so yeah, I think sometimes we focus a little too much on with rose-colored glasses, and it really is not encouraging when that's not where you're at in life.
Absolutely. I totally agree. And I went through a whole sermon series on Lamentations. We went verse by verse through Lamentations one time. Because I was like, this is...
You leave it like feeling like you need to get on Prozac or something, you know, like...
We did Ecclesiastes one time too. And that's actually how this podcast came to be about, because I called it, the series was called Life Rediscovered. And so, it's about Solomon looking back in his life and going, all this was vanity. And the only thing that matters is God.
Meaningless. Dust in the wind.
All that matters is God. So,
I
think it's important to, you know, it's like when you're dealing with your kids, right? And they throw a huge temper tantrum, right? You know, they yell and scream and this and that. And you know, we learn from these mistakes, right? We might yell and scream back at them and we realize, well, that just made it worse. And if we just calmly let them just get out what their emotions, eventually they will calm down because they get tired. they wear themselves out. But then level heads prevail and they realize okay, yeah, mom, dad, you were right. I'm sorry. And this and that. And we do the same thing. We might get we might get too worked up. And then we realize well, that was stupid. Why did we get so worked up? And we say, we're sorry. And I feel like that's how God, you know, treats us without him getting, you know, riled up. Right. He never gets riled up. He just sits there and just calmly. Yeah. Okay. Okay.
And
okay.
Are you familiar with Stephen Cole?
I've heard that name before. The name sounds familiar. Yes.
He's at one of the bigger churches somewhere. And he's written lots of books and stuff. I'd come across it and I was just really trying to dive deep in faith and prayer and all that. I came across an article written that just resonated with me so much so that I sought him out, to be able to contact him. And then in doing so, I found some other books he had written. And one of them is, on Hebrews chapter 11. And I had first started, read the first chapter, and he has these little questions at the end, and it talks about, you know, like, is it okay to, you know, like talk to God that way? Like, you know, we had this excellent dialogue back and forth, and I asked him, I said, okay, how did he rephrase the question? It was, is it a Christian-like advice to tell somebody it's okay to be angry with God? Like, is that a Christian, you know?
Sure.
And I said, and I told him my knee-jerk Christian answer is no, that wouldn't be godly counsel.
Sure.
I said, but, you know, anyway, his response to me really kind of made a light bulb go off. He was like, He said, think about your own children, just like you just said. He said, if they're in a situation that has them angry and upset, and they're just voicing their angry and with their situation, and they feel like you can do something to change it, does that upset you with them? And I'm like, no, in fact, it makes me want to wrap them in my arms and give them a hug. He says, now if they then like attack you and are verbally aggressive and disrespectful, he says, can't you tell the difference between the two? And it was, I don't know, I kind of like had that light bulb moment of surely we've all had times where our kids think we hate them. And you know, all we can kind of do is like, you know, give them a hug and say, gosh, I hate you feel that way. But it doesn't make me angry that they say that.
No.
You know?
No.
Now, in their anger against me, absolutely, they can do and say things that are going to upset me. But them just expressing the fact that they're angry does not make me angry.
No. And I like what you said, because I've had that experience too, where you hear your kids and they're just expressing their emotions. And it does make you want to just wrap them in your arms and just give them a big hug and say, you know, I hear you. I feel you. And that's really what they're doing. They're just saying, I just need somebody to hear me right now and feel me right now and relate to me right now.
Correct.
And God knows that. God knows when we do the same thing, we're just saying, I need you to hear me right now and to feel me right now and relate to me right now. And then he's like, I do, you know, that's why I sent Jesus as a sympathetic savior to understand what you're going through. And I get it. And obviously, you know, we don't want to shake our fist, you know, forever at God and be defiant, have a cold heart towards him, you know, but he will sit there and patiently listen and, you know, quote unquote, wrap his arms around us and hold us close and say, I get it. I hear you. And I still love you. Yeah. And because he's
in the instance of, you know, that I had kind of multiple like prodigal children in some degree, but when the first one kind of was, you know, it was the story of the prodigal. And I went and I studied that parable backwards and forwards. And the phrase that just kept jumping out again and again and again, you know, the father was never angry or even really seemed all that disappointed in him. But the phrase that resonated with me is, but when he came to his senses, you know, he didn't even go out there and try to convince him or anything. It was just, it took that child. They came to his senses, and you know, the father welcomed him back with opened arms and completely restored him, and no hard feelings for anything he said or did.
Yeah. One of the things I learned about that story was, you know, I always pay attention to what the father's reaction when he says he saw his son a long way off, he ran to him. And I said that, you know, that was so foreign to a ancient Jewish person for a father to run to his son like that, especially a son who has left and, you know, squandered everything and come back.
Right.
And when the father's, one thing I learned it from Tim Keller in his book on the prodigal son, he told his servants, go kill the fattened calf, which means he'd already anticipated his son returning.
That he was right. He was ready. Right.
He was ready for it. So he said, go kill the fattened calf and get the feast ready. Because he was just ready. He was just like, any day now, my son's going to return. I'm going to run to him. I'm going to put the robe on him. I'm putting a ring on his finger. He's going to be my son again. And we're going to have a party because my son was lost and now is found and he is returned. And so it's just all such a powerful story about restoration. And it's like Jesus is telling that story to say, this is how God treats you when you turn to him. You know, it doesn't matter how, if you stink, if you're dirty, if you just have nothing left, it doesn't matter. He just cares that you turn to him and he'll run to you and wrap his arms around you. Such a powerful story. So, well, Katrina, I really appreciate you coming on the Life Rediscovered podcast. I really enjoyed our conversation tell us where we can find you. Tell the audience where we can find you, social media, websites. Obviously, we want to get your book, and I'm going to put a link to your book in the show notes when this episode goes live. And I'll put links to your website as well so that people can find you. But let people know where they can find you right now.
Well, I do have a website. It's Katrina, it's Katrina, and then middle initial L. And then robertson.com, katrinalrobertson.com. So that has a little bit more information about me and links to other podcasts. And there's a link to my book there. The book, he's like you mentioned, you'll put it in the show notes. But if you go to Amazon and you just search juror hashtag 11, you'll find it pretty easily there. I've got it in paperback and Kindle format. And then also recorded an audiobook. If some of you, if you're podcast listeners, audiobooks may be your thing. Full disclosure, though, I recorded it myself, and I am in no means a professional voiceover, but it was important to me to record it in my voice. Sure. So it was a huge learning curve to learn all that sound
for sure.
Stuff. But so it's not, we're not talking professional quality, but if you prefer to just listen to it, it is an option. And yeah. In fact, I mean, if you find me and want the audiobook for free, I'll send you a coupon code and you can download it.
Awesome. Cool. Well, make sure that you check out Katrina's websites. Make sure you get her book. Again, I'll put the link to the book in the show notes as well as her website. But again, Katrina, thank you so much for coming on. I really enjoyed hearing a little bit about your story and just about what you've learned about faith and everything else and just life in general. And, you know, it'd be awesome to have you on again. We can talk sure, more. Absolutely. We can talk more about this
and
stuff.
And my husband is also an excellent, people like him more than me. So he does some podcasts as well. If you want to get into more theological type stuff, but he also, he has a heart for ministry and awesome. Hurting people.
Yeah, no, that'd be great. That'd be great. We could have you both on at the same time. and you're like, well, maybe not. Maybe not.
Yeah, no.
Again, Katrina, thanks again for coming on. And thank you, everyone, for listening to the Life Rediscovered podcast, where we talk about life, faith, and everything in between. Until next time, see ya. Thank you so much for listening to Life Rediscovered. Make sure that you subscribe to this podcast so you don't miss a new episode. Also, if you'd like to support this podcast, you can go to buymeacoffee.com/Ryan Reevely. I would love your support. And again, thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.